Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
Litigators have historically,
even litigators have historically
been very pretty forward thinking about technology helping them do their jobs. You know, it's got to prove out and it's got to work.
In last week's IDN, GE's Director of Legal Technology, Jay Brutz, discussed how the company is using technology so that disputes can be resolved or conducted cheaper and more effectively. This week, we conclude that discussion by covering trends in litigation technology. Jay mentions the pressures on technology to respond to increases in the volume of documentation, the impact that new technologies like telepresence are bound to have on how disputes are conducted in a global environment, and he also answers the question of what keeps him awake at night when the technology isn't right. The last point sort of begs the question. If androids dream of electric sheep, do legal technologists dream of electronic documents?
You know, the things that I see are the increase in the size of the document corpuses that we're going to handle. And this happens.
You mean the volume of documentation?
Yeah, the volume of documents is just growing. And the real money there is in the review of those documents. So, you know, for every dollar we spend processing discovery data, we spend $10 on the review of it, and that is a huge issue.
So does that mean that there's going to be a trend towards digitizing that and sending it offshore to India or to lower cost? I mean, you've seen lower cost providers also in the U.S.
No. Yes, I mean, and that is the trend that's going on. So there's a big trend in getting a handle on review. There's a big
in other words, disaggregating the discovery from the cases and finding the lower cost providers to review the documents.
Yes, right. Yes. So, you know, unbundling that service from the law firm.
The model will have the model would be the law firm has some more senior lawyers who are working on it, but the actual document review is being done by someone else. It could be a low cost provider in the U.S. or somebody in India.
Yes,
it's being done by another provider.
And you know, the nuances there are when we have cases with European custodians. Sometimes you have to do in-country review. Sometimes you have to do
a privacy laws.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to do a first cut in-country. It could be difficult. So there's things there. There's export control things that are related to those. There's a lot of nuances there. But that moving the review away from the law firm, or at least getting the, you know, there's a lot of law firms now who are starting to try to play in that market too, who are trying to provide more of a managed review than a typical law firm review. And, you know, I don't know that that's going to end up being in their core competency, because when do they really want to be in competition with the people who are doing this as commodity work? I don't know if that's where a law firm wants to be. So
one trend is towards facilitating the review of large amounts of data,
yes,
by someone other than the major law firms that would be supporting you.
Yes. Yeah. So that's one
new technology is coming in there. Where else do you see that?
Increased collaboration.
That technology, as far as I've seen from you, is already there. I mean, the stuff gets digitized, and then anybody in the world can review it.
Yeah. Oh, that toothpaste is out of the tube.
And it's on a per gigabyte basis. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just commoditizing that more. Increased collaboration between us and the law firm. You know, where I'd eventually like to be is a place where we have a collaborative workspace where all of the players can manage the case together, meaning the firm, the corporation, these vendors that are doing managed parts, because to me that helps me to disaggregate, as you say. So if I have one place that's sort of the central place for the project management of it, because, you know, as we're finding out in the e-discovery and the lit support side, and you know this, and this is our dirty secret, 90% of litigation is project management.
Right. I was going to say that it sounds like what you're saying is that that's what lawyers are going to increasingly have to become, as you know, project managers.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's to me, that is their sweet spot. You know, that's going to be where the value add is going to remain, because you know, as things get disaggregated and commoditized, that project management is going to end up being the sole piece of special. Well, project management and domain knowledge is always going to be those two things that you need to get from a law firm or someone. And you know, the smarter firms, I think, are going to realize that and are going to optimize their stance for that.
They're people who are able to actually lead teams,
yes,
pull together different vendors and provide a service.
Yes,
where, yeah,
heterogeneous teams, right, that they can pull together and from a
internally
tech side,
and externally, and yeah.
And from a tech side, it's my job to provide the platforms to do that on. That's where I'm trying to go is to
of that over the next two, 3 years. What else do you see besides the document, the managing voluminous documentation?
Cost of review, KM, when you get to
KM
is knowledge management. Oh. So sort of the thing I was talking about before, where it's difficult to do knowledge management in the company. You know, that's the ultimate problem. That's what's driving the expense in U.S. litigation, actually, is the fact that the company doesn't know what the company knows. If you're a natural person, I can tell you, when was the last time you went to Kmart? And you could probably figure that out fairly easily. When I ask a fictive person, like a company, like, you know, a big, large corporation, what were the last dealings you had with Kmart? That's a gigantic question. It's extremely difficult to answer that question. So, I mean, what's happening is the scale of the enterprise is causing these latent problems that we're always there, but because the scale is increasing so much, they're becoming patent problems with our processes. It's a lot of P's. They're coming to the fore as an issue. So, to me, knowledge management isn't just a lawyers doing their job issue. It's an enterprise issue I'm expecting to see some trends there. Other than that, I'm not sure really where that's about as far as I've thought as far as trends.
You know, 5 to 25 years down the road, do you think? Do you ever have visions of where the technology is eventually going to take us, or is it coming in so fast that you can't see beyond 1, 2, 3 years down the road?
Yeah, that's hard to say.
I'll give you an example: telepresence. I would never have thought of international arbitration hearings being done by a video conference.
Yeah,
we started doing rehearsals via telepresence, where, boy, it's a totally different technology.
It's completely. I mean, really, when you think about it, and how have I described telepresence to people? It's video conferencing that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
That's the only way to describe it, and it's great.
It's like being in the same room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of things. For international arbitrations, I think that'll be. That'll be wonderful. I'm trying to think. It is difficult to describe. You know, if you think about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, would your phone, 15 years ago, would everybody have a phone? Or they were still a little special and they were the size of a brick at that point. And then would you be getting your email? Of course, you didn't know about email, but would that be such a crucial thing? And think about how things have changed in the last 15 years, and think if that rate of change proceeds for the next 15 years.
So it's just tough to see into where, what technologies are going to be. It will change us, but we can't predict exactly where it's going to lead us over that long of a period.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think, law firms are going to get more nimbler. They're going to get closer to both their clients and the other constituencies on the project, and the tech is going to help that. I think that's probably the key takeaway. The enterprise is going to be able to reach into itself much more easily and pull out the data you want. So eventually, when you ask that question, what have we done with Kmart?
Yeah.
It won't be hard. It'll be reasonably easy. The difficulty is then going to be getting legal advice on those documents, right? So, right. I mean, we're going to be able to locate all those documents very easily, very quickly, internally, pretty much as a function of our systems. But then it's still going to be the problem of how do we privilege screen those? How do we responsiveness screen them? All those kind of things are going to continue to be the problem. And I don't see the answer to that yet.
What are your failures as someone in your position who fails, doesn't do their job right? What are the risks? I mean, what are the things that keep you up at night?
Getting fired.
Well, yeah, that's. oh, by the way.
Yeah, that's the big risk. I feel a lot better. The thing that always concerned me was the case that sort of just submarines and, you know, it isn't managed properly from day one. And I think we're getting a handle on that.
That's the project manager or the litigator who's handling the case. I mean, legal technologist. Or what are you, by the way, a legal technologist?
Yeah, you could say that.
What do you call yourself?
I guess legal technologist would work. So, you know, what are the risks we face if the tech fails us?
If you were responsible for providing the technology to a legal organization of 1,200 people, right?
Yeah.
If your processes, the processes you put in place break down, where are the critical links? Where are the things that make it would keep you up at night if you had a problem with something?
You know, there's a lot of it that's very mundane. I got to get the bills paid on time. You know, there's a lot of firms that there's a lot of money that flows through our systems, and we got to get those paid in a reasonable amount of time. But they're very mundane. The sort of from a risk standpoint where I sit, you know, the things that I would like to see are more controls around our contracting processes, where that's where I think we could help a lot more, as far as managing document assembly and contract lifecycle management. Those are places where I can see risk approaching, and
almost on a controllership basis.
Yes, right? Yes, that's definitely on a controllership basis. So having workflows for acceptance of non-standard terms and things like that would be very helpful and would help you control a lot of that stuff. Data security at our vendors. A lot of times in litigation, data goes flying around all over the place. Have you checked out the security of the vendors? Has anybody, those offshore vendors, has anybody gone and walked their facility? Things like that are very scary. Things like export control with respect to that, because once again, everybody's hair is on fire during a litigation. Are people checking to make sure that there's not any export control technical information that's going offshore, which would
places where it shouldn't go.
Into places where it shouldn't go, right. Which can be a real problem. Right. That can turn into a enterprise risk. But other than that,
when you say enterprise risk, because we use that as that's the bet the farm, a bet the company.
You lose sales on that,
I mean, reputational. It's huge reputational hit.
Well, and there could be a revenue impact on that. If you get barred from doing business in a jurisdiction or something, that's a revenue impact.
Right. So there are things in your area that could impact the overall GE name.
Yeah. But thankfully, there's not a whole ton of those. So. the biggest place is on e-discovery, making sure we're operating in compliance, making sure we're doing our legal holds properly. Those are really, to me, where the biggest risks lie. The problem with that is the standard of care on that is currently a little bit of a moving target. We don't have, there's no binding authority on that. Everything is trial court decisions. So you kind of read the tea leaves and figure out where you ought to be. But that's our job.
Good job?
My job?
Yeah, is it a good job?
Oh, yeah.
That's your job. Is it a good job?
Definitely.
Yeah, I like it.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely the job for me.
Interesting.
Yes, interesting. Never a dull moment, and a very good mix of the tech and the legal. Because as you can tell, I'm kind of a nerdy lawyer. And so it's
this is an audio podcast, but for people who are listening, yes, you are.
Yes. I pushed my glasses up when I said that.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, and you can put your iPhone back in your pocket protector now.
Thank you. Thanks.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.